Midtown got its hustlers, the Bowery got its bums, 42nd Street got Big Jim, a walker, he a bull shooting son of a gun.
The boys are talking sports on your drive into work. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
And when the bad folks all get together at night, you know they all call Big Jim Ball just because. You don't tug on Superman's cape.
You don't do it.
Nope.
You don't speed into the wind. You don't pull a mask off an old Lone Ranger. And
you don't mess around with Jim.
Jim Croce, your artist of the day. Jeff Snyder of the Calgary Roughnecks coming up. He, along with Curtis Dixon, part of the Canadian entry in the World Field Lacrosse Championships last week on the weekend in Denver. They defeat the Americans and are world champs. Pumped for those two guys. Obviously big parts of the Roughnecks, but whenever you can win a world championship, you've done something right. So congrats to both of those guys. Looking forward to talking to Jeff Snyder coming up in about 20 minutes from right now. I overheard a conversation, and I'm really throwing you into the, because it That's just okay. kind of crossed my mind.
Fire away.
In which sport, because we talk about dynasties, I think in some ways everyone is aching for a dynasty. You know what I mean? In sport, everyone seems to want, well, can they do this? Can they do that? And it was funny talking to Daryl Sutter. We never did get him on the air, and I kind of wish we had.
I blame you.
Oh, blame me. You have to win championships to in multiple succession, I think. Back-to-back probably qualifies now, but it shouldn't, and I don't think it does.
I don't think it does. Let's not say two in a row is a dynasty.
So the Kings win, and his point was, they won the Stanley Cup 3 years ago. Last year, or 2 years ago, let's say, the work shortened season. Because the season started late, the Cup was awarded in late June. He said, basically, this is now three straight years we have played well into June. He said, last year, because of the stoppage, we almost played to the same date that we did this year in winning as last year we did in losing the West Final. So the Kings in hockey, I guess just around the horn, NFL, I won't include CFL.
Thank you. You want me to be able to speak about it, so it's a nice little addition there.
What's the legitimate closest thing we might have to a dynasty in sport?
The Heat. 4 years in a row in the final, 1-2, and they're done. They've been dismantled.
But right now, as we sit right now,
well, the last 4 years they've been in the final.
If so that, you are
moving forward,
yes.
I don't know.
And again, tough. You said you have to. To me, qualifying for the final doesn't mean dynasty.
No.
The Oilers weren't a dynasty because they got to four finals.
But you said closest, and I don't think there is a dynasty out there. So I would say that's the closest to this juncture. They're done.
So you will not be putting out the Miami Heat then is what you're telling me, right? Right now, as we look, what's a dynasty right now?
What qualifies to be a dynasty, or which team would I pick here? Which team would I pick? I don't think there's any, man. I mean, you look at Chicago, that's close.
Listen, what team, okay? Just for the love of Pete. Just stay with me.
I'm trying.
See, I knew I shouldn't have brought this up without...
Well, I gave you an answer. You didn't like it, so now you're beating me up on it.
You can't say the Heat and then tell me, but it's over. Well, then that's not what we're talking about. Right now, if you're going to pick a team that is either in or on the verge of a dynasty, the next dynasty team in sport, what are we looking at?
NFL's too hard, so I'm not taking an NFL team. I would say Chicago. Okay.
What about the Seattle Seahawks?
Well, they've won one. I mean,
are you gonna play ball at all here?
I am. So let me just explain myself.
No, just let me explain what it is that I'm trying to accomplish with this conversation. Do you think the Seattle Seahawks?
No,
they have won one championship. They did it in dominating fashion.
Yeah,
they cannot be beaten at home. Do you think that they have the makings?
No, I don't.
To become a dynasty, explain.
Too hard in that league. Too hard. Way too hard. Russell Wilson gets injured. Bye. Know what I mean? It's way too hard in that league. Way too hard. And that's why I'm saying I'm not going to pick an NFL team. It's impossible. There's 32 bloody teams. Injuries are so huge. You can never count on your star players being healthy. And look at the division they're in. Rams are going to be better. Cardinals were very respectable last year. They still got the Niners. I think they'll be very good. I think they could contend. I don't think they can be a dynasty.
Do you think those two teams, the Cardinals and the Rams, are close to the Seahawks right now?
No, but I would not be surprised if one of the two of them beat Seattle this year. I'm just saying it's way too hard in the NFL. Is that okay argument? Am I allowed to have that argument?
Is there anybody else in the NFL?
No, I said I can't pick an NFL team. It's too hard. Look at what's happened. Brady and Belichick have been unbelievable. And what? Did they go back-to-back once or at all? I mean, they've won a few, but I don't know that you can't string them together. And no one's going to be as dominant as those guys were in their prime.
Would you argue, though, that the Seahawks would be the closest thing to it right now?
They look like it right now, but I think that's what everyone says about the team that just won the Super Bowl.
Or do you feel like there's another team that's emerging?
I don't think anyone in the NFL is close, because I think it's impossible. If we have to say three in a row is a dynasty, no one in the NFL is going to do it. It's way too hard.
Yeah, there again, what is a dynasty?
So I think we have to say three.
You got to start with two, and two isn't a dynasty, so
no.
Three.
Yeah, so I just think it's too hard to three. So I'd go to another sport, and that leaves you with NBA, Major League Baseball, NHL.
And I'm not talking basketball. I can't.
So we'll drop that up. So we got Major League Baseball and hockey. Chicago and LA are close. LA's been to the Western Conference Final three times in a row. Chicago's been three out of the last 4 years. They've got two cups. LA's got two cups. That's close.
Which horse are you taking?
Chicago. And that's not easy. That's just off the top of my head. I like a lot of things about LA, but I just look at Kane and Taves. They're going to be good for a long time. The one thing that you could argue back is, well, we'll take Jonathan Quick over Crawford. I absolutely would too. But I think it's easier to find a goalie that can help Chicago win. LA hasn't been dominant in the regular season. They just haven't. They got in as an 8 seed. They win the cup. They were a 6 this time. They start on the road. The only home ice they had was in the final.
Did it matter?
Nope.
Chicago had home ice?
Yeah.
Didn't matter.
But the thing about LA, they were a bounce away three times. In each of those first three series, there could have been one bounce go a different way, and they could have lost the series. So they were living by the skin of their teeth. Did they win it? Yes. Did they deserve it? Absolutely. Were they a phenomenal team? One for the ages. But I just don't see them as dominating as Chicago can be with all their weaponry.
What was amazing 3 years ago was to watch how the Kings did it, because there was no one close. They just absolutely steamrolled their way through, despite being an 8 seed.
It's true.
This time around, they, again, narrowly get out of round one. I still feel like that's as much on the Sharks as anything else. How do you not close out a team with four tries?
Four?
Terrible. I'm writing down Joe Thornton's name because I want to talk about him in a moment.
Good.
I think it's hard not to take Chicago right now because of those two guys alone.
Yeah.
They're signed. They're young. They're not going anywhere. And, I mean, here's the other part of it, too. How much disrespect do we pay to Marian Hossa, Patrick Sharp, these other guys? Because they're getting older.
Well, how about this? Keith, Seabrook, Chalmerson, Oduya, Letty. Like, are you kidding me? They've got five excellent defensemen there. And Letty, is what? Young kid. Got all the tools. I really think they're much deeper on the blue line than they get credit for, and they've got Chalmerson and Keith locked up till the end of time. This is a very, very deep hockey club. I don't love their goalie, but he has been good enough for them to win. I don't know how much more progress you can expect out of him, but I would go Chicago, and I would not have any problem with someone else saying LA. But I think those are the only two options you have. If Boston had made noise this year, maybe, but they didn't.
Yeah, it's hard to include anyone in this conversation right now other than the Kings or the Blackhawks. What about baseball?
Well, I don't see any team right now that is dynastic. I mean, St. Louis has been around, but I don't...
What was that word?
Dynastic, like of a dynasty.
Is that a word?
Google it. I think, I don't know. If it's not, I'll own it. I want it. If it's not a word yet, I'll take it.
Because I thought...
I'll make it.
I thought it was like dynamic...
I think dynastic's a word.
Dynastic?
I'm pretending if it isn't.
I feel bad that I got you.
No. So with majors, I think you could see a dynasty in Major League Baseball because it is the system that is least set up for parity, at least the structure of the system. There is parity in baseball, but you can spend whatever you want. No other league can you spend as freely as Major League Baseball. And you look at what the Dodgers have done. They've added tens and hundreds of millions of payroll in the last few years. If they continue to do that and go pick up every top pitcher every summer, or every winter, I should say, every offseason, maybe they could do it, and you wouldn't be shocked if they won three in a row. I just can't see it happening in any other league, whereas in baseball, yeah, I could see that. If you've got Kershaw, Greinke, and then you go get a David Price or a James Shields when those guys hit the market, maybe they could do it. So I think baseball has the best chance at someone winning three in a row. It's just no one's got two in a row yet, if you know what I mean.
Which kind of lends to the other part. We always talk about parity and how great it is. I think it's great for leagues to have parity.
It's great for owners to have it, yeah.
I don't know if fans really want it. If you're just, if you have your own team, and beyond that, do we really want parity? Every year, somebody else, oh, this year it's your turn, and then this year it's your turn, and this year it's your, I don't know that that's really what people want. I think that's what they say, but I think we love having that black hat. We love having the team to cheer against because the fans that love them because they win all the time. And the fans that hate them because they're tired of watching them win. I think that's what brings out a lot of what's good in sport. If you just watch it, oh, that's great. The San Francisco, the Giants win the World Series. And now the Cardinals win the World Series. And the the Yankees win the World Series. That one's different just because the Yankees have been hated forever. But how? I mean, do you hate the Giants? Do you hate the Cards?
You don't care, no. Especially because they're NL teams. And a lot of people, because they're in Canada and there's the Blue Jays, you just don't. Don't see him.
But all of
care.
A sudden, if the Red Sox go back to back, or if the Yankees go back to back, or if any team, it's like, okay, you've had your turn, that's enough. And people start to turn. Dynastic is a word?
It is a word, yes.
Joe Thornton with the San Jose Sharks. Read in somehow Elliot Friedman came up with his, 50 thoughts or something? Season ending?
50.
I don't know what it is.
Caught up on that. That's good.
We were talking, at least I was talking with somebody yesterday about the Philadelphia Flyers. We were talking about Ron Hextall, the type of guy he is. He's in charge of the Flyers now. And the move that he made getting Scott Hartnell out of town. It's like, that's an interesting trade. Because I don't know that they get the better player in R.J. Umberger.
Agree. There's not much of a money
There's
difference.
Not much. I mean, down the road, you get a couple years, I think, cap relief.
There's
down
one,
the road.
One year term difference, I think.
And the thought process, at least the way I see it, and I think it to be true, that the sooner they can make this Claude Giroux's team and not the Richards, Carter, Hartnell group, because they were all, that was part of that era, which was not that long ago, and they were unsuccessful at the same time. But this is now, it's new. It's Giroux, it's Simmons, it's Reed, it's Couturier, Voracek, those guys.
Yeah, and Umberger's got 3 years left. Hartnell had five, so you're right. Yeah. It was 2 years difference. That's all they get. The salary, very similar.
So I wonder if in, because you see some teams do that, and we saw it here. You saw with the Flames how just everything kind of changed when you took one guy out of the locker room. I'm not looking to throw Jerome under, but listen, it was different. We talked about it last week. We talked about it with, Brent Sutter had the quote last week. He said that in his last year, Mark Giordano was the captain.
Just not in name.
Jerome was still here.
He'd already taken over the room.
Yeah, wow. So in San Jose, what are they doing with Joe Thornton? He is the captain, but it seems the consensus around the league that the sooner this becomes Logan Couture's team, and I guess Pavelski as well, but it's Couture, it's who's the other young kid?
Marc-Andre Vlasic, Edward Vlasic on the blue line, obviously.
But the forward, the
Hurdle.
Thomas Hurdle, these guys. The sooner it becomes their team,
Nieto, the young kids.
The better. So what do you do with Joe? Because you can take the letter off of him. That's fine, but he's still there.
Literally, rather trade him than de-letter him. Rather than humiliate him, right?
Yeah. Literally and physically a huge presence in that room. And you can ignore him, but he's still there.
And his extension of 3 years at $6.75 million kicks in this fall.
And I think that, what about Patrick Marleau? I think he's such a wallflower that he's just, I'll just sit here and I'll play. I'll get my 30 goals or 25 or 28 goals, and I'll just play, and you won't hear a peep.
And Marlowe's a Swiss Army knife. You can put him wherever. Center, right, left, penalty kill, power play, even strength, checking role, scoring role. He does everything. I love Joe Thornton as a hockey player, and I would not want to trade him as a general manager, but you can understand looking where the Sharks are at and what's happened and the need to change the culture somehow, why they're considering it. I just don't know where you get a return or how you move him, because he's got a no move A, and whoever you're getting back, the best player you just traded in the deal. That's the dilemma, right?
Yeah, but it's when you get to that point, and I think when you're trying to make that change, it's not always about winning the trade. It's about making the trade, even if it's a break even, if it's a, you know, but we did what we had to do.
Or you get younger, something like that, yeah.
Because I don't know that the Philadelphia Flyers won that deal. I don't think they're better with R.J. Umberger than they are with Scott Hartnell, but
they change the culture, you're right.
They change it up.
Yeah.
And with everything we've talked about with San Jose, well, they got a different goalie. They got to change this. They got to change. What about the coach? No, the coach is fine. I still wonder how long Joe Thornton is going to be a member of the San Jose Sharks, finally, as it sounds like it's getting real. And the other thing with that no move clause, I think Joe's a prideful guy. If it's like, hey, you know what?
We want to do this.
We want to do this. We want to move on from you. Give us a list of teams. I think he'd do that because I think, what are you going to, just because you really like Northern California, you're going to go to the rink every day with a team that doesn't watch you?
Just go spend your summers there. Live the rest of your life there. You can do that. So the question becomes, what can you get back for Joe Thornton that helps you win now? Because you're going to get some parts. It might be two or three guys.
What's he making?
$6.75 million for the next 3 years, full no move.
In terms of taking on that hit, I mean, it sounds crazy, but it's not like you can't, all of a sudden, $6 million. Ron O'Reilly wants $6 million. Joe Thornton's making $6 million. There's got to be some team out there that would look at it and say, well, if we move some other things around, we could bring in a top two easy, any team in the league, top two center.
Number one center on all but five
or
10
sounds,
teams in the league.
To even say top two is probably not fair to Joe.
And here, just for comparison's sake, Phil Kessel makes $8 million and Dion Phaneuf makes $7 million. So those guys make more money than Joe. I know who I'd have if I had the pick of any of those three. I'd take the guy in teal.
Not an easy one to make, but I just thought it was kind of an interesting one to watch with what we saw take place in Calgary, we saw it in Philly, and now San Jose apparently is trying to do the same thing.
So where the heck does he end up? Because he holds some cards here, right? He's providing a list. Where would you want to go, and where's he comfy? Because clearly comfort's important to him. He signs the extension because he likes the Bay Area.
Yeah.
He wants to be there. He likes the guys. He has a place. Where else would he be comfortable? He's an Ontario guy, and I wonder if Brendan Shanahan couldn't find a way to make that happen. I don't think the previous regime could do it.
Boy, I don't know if he's, like, he's from there, but if he loved San Jose, that's a far cry from Toronto.
It is, but it doesn't mean he can't spend all his summers and the rest of his life there. The other thing with Joe is that he's used to dealing with how much media in San Jose.
Couple.
Yeah.
We got a radio guy, and we got a print guy.
And they got a couple hundred in Toronto.
That's what I mean.
I don't know if that fits his style. I think he'd rather be low-key Joe than bright light Mike, so to speak, right?
We'll take a break. We will come back with Jeff Snyder from the Calgary Roughnecks. He is fresh off of a world championship with Canada at the field. World Lacrosse Championships. We'll get the experience and the story when we come back from Jeff Snyder, Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Gonna tell you a story that you won't believe, but I fell in love last Friday evening with the girl I saw on the barroom TV screen.
Proud to be Calgary's only 24/7 all sports radio, Sportsnet 960 The Fan. She caught my eye and I put it back and I
ordered myself. Shots and beers. Coming up tonight on the Sportsnet 960 The Fan, we'll pick up the Red Sox and Blue Jays joined in progress. With any luck, it'll be going a little bit better than it was last night. 14-1 the final in favor of the Red Sox. Jays look to get back on track. Pleased to be joined by our next guest. Whenever you can welcome a world champion to the show, it's a good day. And I'm guessing that's still, I'm betting the novelty still hasn't worn off yet. For Jeff Snyder from the Calgary Roughnecks and for these purposes, part of the Canadian World Champion Field Lacrosse Team. Jeff, congratulations, man. How's it feel?
It's incredible. You know, it's always an honor representing your country, and when you win, that's a good thing, too. So, you know, we're enjoying it. I'm going to enjoy it for, you know, the next couple of days and probably the next 4 years. So I'll sit on this one for a little while.
Yeah, I bet you will, man. It's one of those tournaments that I think until you kind of pay attention, it might fly under the radar a little bit because we go to the Roughnecks game, that's box lacrosse, and this is field. It's a little bit different. Obviously, it's played outdoors. For you, though, the difference in style, the difference in the game, are you more well-suited to one than the other?
Yeah, I'm probably more of a box lacrosse player. My role is, I wouldn't say it's limited. It's just possession is so important in the field lacrosse game that they sort of, you know, they melt your role down a little bit in the sense that, you know, I'll just go out and face off and then come off the field. So it's, the guys that are out there playing are unbelievable. And, you go and get them the ball and you stay fresh and you go and get them the ball again. So it's, not more so one than the other, but, I definitely enjoy box lacrosse more, but, yeah. Field lacrosse is it's a great game, and we were lucky to go out there this summer and do what we did.
It was down in Denver, and I know getting into just kind of looking at the event itself, I was blown away by how many countries took part in this thing. This truly is a world game.
Yeah, I want to say there was close to 50. The teams are like Uganda had a team, so it was. It was crazy to see all the different nations coming together, and it was such a huge event. I know they started games at 8 in the morning, and then due to weather delays and lightning and stuff like that, we didn't start games until 10 p.m. So it was a massive event over the 10 days there, and really cool to see just how many countries are actually playing the sport.
Chatting with Jeff Snyder, part of the Canadian World Championship squad from the Worlds in Denver on the weekend. So take us back, your inclusion on this team. Tell us about how it came to be that you were able to suit up for your country.
Well, I played in 06 and 2010. 06 we won, 2010 we came up short to the Americans in Manchester. And then we go to October. And we have a mini camp in October in Buffalo. It was over the course of over 4 days and just a huge grind. We got a bunch of guys together to play in Hawaii, which was about 10 days later, and then they just sort of had it set up from there. We didn't really get together too much until July 6th. So conference calls, stuff like that, are pretty. It was a pretty, pretty light load in terms of how much time we actually spent together. And then got into Denver and hit the ground running on July 6th, and we were two-a-day practices and a couple of scrimmages and then right into the tournament. So it's been going on since about October 2013 and moving into the summer here.
It speaks to just how, obviously, how smart you need to be and how in tune with the game you have to be, because to take part in a world championship and to have no tune-up time, you look at this roster, and I think fans of the Roughnecks and even the Rush here in the province would recognize a lot of names. I guess it helps that there's that familiarity with some teammates and even some guys that you play against a ton.
Yeah, the level of lacrosse is outstanding. Just the guys that are on the roster, just for people who know the game, like Mark Matthews, Zach Greer, Curtis Dixon, and the list goes on and on and on. Kevin Crowley, Brody Merrill, there's so many guys that are on this team that are so good. The challenge is becoming a championship group in 10 days. You don't have years or a season to come together, and there's a lot that goes on within those 10 days. You got to find your role. A guy like Cam Holding, who plays for the Mammoth, he came in as a defensive player, and he ends up being an offensive player, scoring a huge goal for us in the final game. So there's a lot of just identifying where everybody fits in, and who's going to do what, and you're managing the best players in arguably the world and what their expectations are, along with filling a role and buying into the whole identity, which is that group. It's a real challenge over 10 days, and when it comes together, it's a pretty cool thing to witness. So this team was an incredible group that really came together in the final 80 minutes of this game and ultimately winning a championship.
Jeff Snyder of the Roughnecks, part of the Team Canada, the world champion Canadian field lacrosse team winning it over the course of the weekend down in Denver. Our guest here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Now, in the round robin, you ended up playing the Americans in the championship final. You had actually lost to the U.S. in the round robin 10-7. What did you learn in that game? Because ordinarily I would think you kind of have a bit of a pit in your stomach. You've already lost to them once. Now it's for everything. Or did you feel like you had left a little bit out on the field, if you will, in that 10-7 loss?
Well, that was our first. We hadn't played a competitive game yet, so that was our first game against, you know, real competition. And, you know, for us, you know, we were down. I think we were down like 9-4, something like that, and then came back to 10-7. You know, we realized we could play. You learn a lot in those games. Because the close ones are the ones that, you know, you find out kind of who you are and where you need to fine two things. You know, we beat England like 23-3 or something like that. And you know, but you don't really, you get to work on your systems, but you don't really get to see, you know, what your group's all about. So, you know, for us, we hadn't played as a group a game with high level competition yet.
Yeah.
And it was a good confidence builder for us just to know that we could hang with them. You know, we progressed through the tournament, had another close one against the Iroquois, 9-8. Curtis Dixon scored the game-winning goal with under a minute left. So, you know, it was good for us to get into these battles to ultimately, you know, sort of figure out who we were. So, yeah, it didn't feel like we left. We left it all out there on the field. I think we just knew that we could compete, and it gave us an opportunity to work on things moving into the semis and ultimately the finals.
In lacrosse, I would guess, whether it's box or field, when the goals start to come, sometimes it's hard to stop that rush of momentum, and we've seen it with you, the Roughnecks, going both ways, and I guess I was a part of it as well. The goals just came coming, and finally 5-2 becomes 6-2, becomes 7-2, and you guys were rolling.
Well, yeah, we're kind of waiting for them to go on a run, and you know, we had the ball. Field lacrosse is an interesting game. There's no shot clock. You could maintain possession the entire game, the entire quarter at least, until you had another faceoff. So, you know, we just managed the clock really well, and we managed the possession, and we went through different sets, and we were just kind of waiting for them, and it just never happened. So, you know, they scored three goals late in the game, but other than that, the execution of our game plan that was put out there by, you know, head coach Randy Mearns and Matt Brown and another Albertan, Taylor Ray, was unbelievable. I think the MVPs of that tournament were our coaches. They outcoached these guys real bad.
So you win in 06, and now you win in 14. Which one, obviously one's more fresh, but which one maybe a little bit more special to you?
I said earlier, you know, in the week I think I was just immature in 2006. I didn't understand the magnitude of what this championship really meant. You know, it was awesome to be a part of it. It was incredible to win. But you know, this year, when you get a little older, you really understand how important this is. And you know, 8 years later, losing a heartbreaking one in Manchester to the Americans, it's really, really special. So one isn't more important than the other. I think I was naive in 2006 to how big of a deal this was. I just came out of college and won a world championship. So, you know, and then now you're grinding it out and you're on the losing end of one and you understand how challenging the tournament is. It really hits home on how important this is, in the lacrosse community.
You hear that from guys all the time, don't you? Any sport, if you win something, or even if you get to a final when you're young, it's just natural to assume, okay, well, this is how it goes, and this is how it's going to go for me. And then you realize pretty quick that it's not going to be that simple.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, you just get as losing is a habit, so is winning. And you know, I was fortunate enough to play on some championship teams growing up, and you just sort of get used to that process. And then you spend 4 years expecting to win another one, and you don't. And then you got to sit with that for another 4 years. So a big thing was Chris Anderson was a guy who, you know, gave up. Not a lot of people know, but Chris was our goaltender. He was a goaltender on the team since, I want to say, 98. gave up a month of chemotherapy when he was fighting brain cancer to come and compete for Team Canada. And you know, we lost in 2010, and that was a real, real big thing for us. And then we lost Kyle Miller, who was our other goaltender in 2006, to lung cancer last year. So it was a really important tournament just to represent Canada on behalf of those guys and put a little bit more added positive pressure on the situation for us too.
That's great stuff. Jeff Snyder joining us here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Canada winning the World Championships in lacrosse on the weekend and doing it over the Americans, which I'm guessing is always fun, right? If you're going to beat somebody, it may as well be the Americans.
It's pretty special. A buddy of mine said that last night. He just said, whenever you beat the U.S. at anything, it's always pretty good. So, we really enjoyed it and just so proud of the lacrosse community supporting us. It was really cool coming home and getting out and coaching and being around the kids and them knowing about what was going on too. So, winning one's great. Beating the U.S., it sort of compounds how good that feels.
Selfishly, I suppose, does this help take any of the sting off of the loss to Rochester in the final game of the season?
Not at all. That's still a sour one. I had a great chat with Coach Malowski yesterday. He was super fired up for us and really happy for Curtis and I. And at the same time, we kind of chatted about how, again, touching on the subject of how challenging championships are. With the World Championship, you kind of know you're always going to be in the semifinals, finals with Team Canada, being one of the top nations playing the game. Whereas, in the NLL, you don't know if you're going to be in there. You don't know how it's going to go. You could go, an entire career and not get to the NLL finals. So, Kurt was, I know Kurt still, he doesn't go a day without thinking about it.
I bet.
He sort of reiterated the fact that it was great for us to win, and he's still real pissed about the NLL championship. So it certainly doesn't take the sting off of that at all.
How cool to have one of your roughneck teammates. We've not talked a lot about Curtis Dixon. You mentioned the big goal that he scored against the Iroquois, but he's a dangerous, dangerous player, and look forward to seeing him even getting stronger with the Roughnecks next year.
And he was unbelievable. Curtis is an incredible athlete and an amazing lacrosse player, and he was a real problem for the Americans matchup wise. They didn't know what to do with him, you can't blame him. It's so great to see him having the success that he's having and really growing into one of the best players in the world, and he certainly proved that over the last 10 days. He was huge for us, scored big goals at big times, and was really a total staple for us in terms of being a matchup threat for every team we face. So he's getting better every day, and I'm real proud of him and really impressed with how he separated himself. He was an all-world attackman.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty big deal.
The game of lacrosse has been pretty good to you. Hey, when you think about the NLL and world championships and just championships in general, and I know you're giving back with kids and helping younger players get involved with the sport. When you're in grade 11 or 12, could you have envisioned that lacrosse would have been as big a part of your life as it has been?
Not at all. I was a hockey player, man.
Yeah.
I had no idea. And it's been... we're so fortunate to be in this situation. Lacrosse obviously isn't as mainstream as other sports, but we certainly are in a position where we get to work in the sport and coach and run a business and get to play professionally and get to experience stuff like this. Bobby was down there in Denver and was out hanging out with us it's just really cool to be able to do that as a family and have him around as well. So we're so lucky and a day doesn't go by where we feel fortunate for the opportunities that we've been given and certainly the opportunity to play professionally and work with kids and all that stuff. So it's incredible. I would have never thought this was the direction that this career was going to go.
Jeff, congrats, man. I don't know how Olympians do it when you have one event every 4 years to achieve the ultimate goal has to be one of the most satisfying things. I mean, to lose like you did, like you say, in 2010, you lose. It's got to be heartbreaking. You wonder, will you be around 4 years from now to make it good? And now you've got a couple under your belt. Congratulations. I know a lot of people, certainly in the Calgary lacrosse community and even just in sports. You do a lot. You give a ton of your time, and there's very few charity events you're not at. So congrats, and wear it proud, man. Awesome.
Hey, thank you so much. I really appreciate all the support, guys.
You bet.
Means a lot to us.
Thanks, Jeff.
You bet. Thank you.
You bet. Jeff Snyder, champion. Wins it in 2006 and then again in 2014. And like you said, I was a hockey player. How do you know what it's going to be? And I love the sport. Never played it as a kid growing up in my little small town. No one knew what it was. But I feel with the players like Snyder and Dixon and McBride and the way they get into the community and they help the kids, and kids then want to go to the games and then they want to play the game. I feel like the sport is really taken off, and there is a very big lacrosse community here in the city, but I think it's going to get bigger and stronger, and here's hoping that there will be more World Lacrosse Championships coming, and those guys will be a big part of it, no question. Curtis Dixon, credit to him on this win as well. We will take a break. When we come back, you know what? We'll revisit something this morning. We had John Huffnagel on talking about the week that was, the narrow victory over the Hamilton Ticats as well, getting set for the Edmonton Eskimos coming up on Thursday. Who's in? Who's out? Details when we come back. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Well, I had just got out from the county prison. Non-support. Tried to find me an executive position, but no matter how smooth I talk, he wouldn't listen to the fact that I was a genius. The man says we got all that we can use. Now I got them steadily depressing, low down, mind messing, working at the car wash blues.
Boomer is talking sports in the morning. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Come on over here. Jim Croce, your artist of the day. If there aren't a few iTunes downloads on this one today, I'll be disappointed in you. The Car Wash Blues. News out of Toronto this morning. I was saying to Pinder, when you can pull the wool over everybody's eyes in Toronto as far as the media is concerned, not to say that they're ultra-savvy, but there's enough of them. You've done it quietly. And quietly indeed, it appears, as Brendan Shanahan has had a busy morning. He has fired Dave Poulin and Claude Loisel, the assistant general managers of the team, and has hired Kyle Dubas as the assistant general manager. Dubas is 28 years of age. He's coming in as the AGM to Dave Nonis. He has been most recently the general manager of the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds in the Ontario Hockey League. This is an interesting hire, to be sure. And the reason why is because this guy is young, he is smart, and he is big into the analytics and advanced stats. This is a big part of, and again, I'm taking what I'm being told, but it seems like there are a lot of people that that know who this guy is, and their work with the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds, a lot of it was behind puck possession and a proponent of analytics and all of this. He has been a scout, he's been an agent, and he's been a GM, and he's under the age of 30, and now is the right-hand man to Dave Nonis. According to this, he was a hockey operations assistant for the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds. I don't know what that means. I don't know what that entails. It probably sounds a little bit more juicy than what it is. But he was a hockey ops assistant for an Ontario Hockey League team at the age of 14. So he is he's the man of the hour. He will be unveiled in front of the dais in Toronto coming up a little bit later on today. And an interesting move for Brendan Shanahan, to be sure. Alan Walsh is a NHL agent. He just tweeted a couple minutes ago from a client, so one of his players. This is awesome for Kyle. He told me he was going to do this when he was my stick boy. So you could probably do a little bit of connection there. Who are the players that he has in his stable that played for the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds? Nonetheless, second to that, Claude Loisel and Dave Poulin, the AGMs, they are out. And there will be some, and I can't help but wonder, kind of bad timing for them. You know what I mean? So the general manager jobs, assistant general manager jobs, all those, they've all been pretty much taken care of? Yeah, they have, eh? You're fired. July 22nd, they decide to let Poulin and Loisel go. And my understanding is completely flooring both of these guys. Maybe you could have seen it in the tea leaves or whatever, but I believe Poulin was on our sister station in Toronto this morning. He joined Walker this morning in Toronto as the assistant GM of the Leafs, and then found out after that he'd been fired. I don't imagine he would have done the radio interview if he knew he was getting gassed. And maybe in fairness, Shanahan wouldn't have had him on the radio today if he knew that he was going to gun him within an hour. But that is what's happened. And obviously people are very quickly going to make a connection of Dave Poulin to Brian Burke to Calgary. How many guys do you need if you're the Calgary Flames? Of course, Arash Madani, he's on Twitter. Wonder what the job title eventually given to Dave Poulin in Calgary will be. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you can never have enough good hockey minds in your business. Maybe that's, if you're the Flames, maybe that's what you look at. But you've got Craig Conroy, you hired Brad Pascal, you've got Brad Treliving. Don't you have to let these guys do what they do? You went out, you did your research, you found the guys that you want to run your show, now let them run it? Or maybe you look at Dave Poulin. Maybe he is one of those guys that, if he's available, you go get him. The consensus belief was that Poulin's days in Toronto were numbered. When Brian Burke left, he was, because the connection is really kind of, it seems to always be Burke and Dave Nonis. Many say that Dave Poulin was kind of it very much in that mix as well. A sounding board, if you will, for Brian Burke. Nonetheless, a move that will be an interesting one to watch. And there will be some, and I'll probably be, the finger will be pointed at me. I don't care if they succeed or fail. But if they begin to, because the one thing, you'll remember last year, between Randy Carlyle and Dave Nonis, the Leafs were really battered by the proponents of advanced stats and metrics, analytics, whatever you want to call it, because they didn't subscribe to it. They were not a team. That's not how they scouted. That's not how they orchestrated trades. It's a tool. Like everyone says, it's a tool, and we use all the tools that are at our disposal. But really, Dave Nonis made no bones about the fact that he didn't put a lot of stock into it. So now, all of a sudden, his assistant general manager, clearly not hired by him, comes in, and he is Mr. Analytics and Advanced Stats. So, A, how's that going to work? And B, you know that everybody that's a big honk for the advanced stats are going to be watching closely. And now I think rooting for Toronto to do well. Because it will be a, here it is. Here's your guy. Here's the guy doing advanced stats. Will it work? Can it work if you dive in that deep? Steve Simmons from the Toronto Sun, Sherry Basson, longtime former and longtime hockey personnel on Kyle Dubas. He's impressive, smart, devoted, dedicated. He believed in advanced stats before it was popular to do so. So this guy is reading from, you know, singing from the hymn book. So the Fenwick people unite. Corsi, it's a Corsi celebration in Toronto today. Now will it work? And like I say, it's going to be interesting to see how it works. And I don't know if you can all of a sudden, are you all of a sudden just going to completely change, like every move, every signing, every trade, everything you do now, is that going to be directly related to your philosophy on advanced stats? I don't think it can be. But I think it's incredibly curious that on one hand you have Dave Nonis, who's on the record saying, really can take it or leave it.
We had a budget, we didn't use it. That's what he said.
And his assistant general manager is all of a sudden being pegged, and I'm sure he'll probably pump the brakes on it, but is already being pegged as Mr. Advanced Stats.
Would it be too overstating things to suggest that we're fresh into his new extension as general manager, maybe they're just circumventing Nonis's philosophies at this point? I mean, it's Shanahan's team, is it not? I get that sense. He said so as such in that, well, I report to my boss. Shanahan's my boss. If Brendan Shanahan feels a certain way about these things, that's how it's going to go. That's the sense I get.
It's not Nonis's hire, right?
Exactly.
Maybe you just don't do it. But if you're Dave Nonis today, how are you feeling? Is this great news for you?
Probably the same way you felt when they had the press conference announcing Shanahan there.
Fantastic. This is great. I look forward to having more input. Your general manager, and that's the other part of this, Claude Loisel and Dave Poulin both fired. So whether or not, because again, those were Burke's guys that were inherited by Nonis when the change was made. So maybe they weren't directly Nonis's guys.
But
clearly, he's not the one firing them. And he's not the one hiring his own assistant.
And if Poulin and Loisel and Nonis and Burke are all on the same page, they work together a lot. They've had track records of working together. Which one of these things ain't like the other ones? Dave Nonis might be the guy that doesn't philosophically fit in, or maybe not. Maybe he was a guy that delegated, and those AGMs were the guys that said, we need Clarkson. We got to re-up Carlisle. I don't know.
28 years old.
That's a stunning story. At 14, he was running. He was an assistant to the GM in the OHL. I was just listening to our sister station a bit in Toronto. Like, he's got an extensive background in things that are not traditional. This is not an old school guy. And we just had on our sister station, I just heard from Chris Johnston, who said, look, you can't even call them advanced stats anymore. They're that commonplace now. They're not that advanced. Once you wrap your head around what they mean, they're quite simple to use.
But you have to, because, you know what I mean? Like, for those that subscribe to it, they will say it's no longer advanced stats. But in the terms of this, where you have one guy who's, that's not how, we don't really pay much attention to them. And this guy who bases pretty much seemingly most, if not all, of his research and evaluation on it.
Well, it's just a tool he uses, right? It's a tool he endorses. It doesn't mean it's the only tool he uses. I think what this means for the Leafs is that they're going to collect information from all over, eyeball tests, scouting reports, old school numbers, new school numbers. Why not use all of that info when making decisions?
Well, it's...
Right? That would be what I... the change, right? Again, before, it was just three of the four.
The point being, if you don't think that one of them has any merit, that's why you don't include it.
Right.
You know, we're going to look at his skating, his shooting, and his ability to play hockey on Xbox 360. It's all hockey related, but if you believe playing Xbox 360 doesn't make you a better hockey player, then you're not going to put much stock into it.
Correct.
I'm exaggerating to make a point.
You are, you have made a point, yeah.
And I think clearly that's where they are. Now, Gord Stellick, interestingly enough, a former general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs, he was 30 when he was hired by the Leafs.
That's young.
So this is different. This is an assistant general manager, but I can't help with the way it's going. Is it inconceivable to think in the next 2 years that Kyle Dubas, if he's already in this position, could be in line for a promotion in the next two hockey seasons?
What did we see in baseball? When you saw young general managers, it was a shift in philosophy that young people had embraced and old people had not. This is that. It's the exact same thing. It's incorporating numbers and philosophies that were not there, that the prior generation did not subscribe to. There's no other way this guy does what he does at 28. There's lots of smart, hardworking people in the hockey business, but he's found something that prior generations and older folks have not subscribed to, or he's figured it out better than they have.
And safe, well...
Globe and Mail published a story on him in 2011 that, at 25 at the time, unbelievable. They're just talking about how young and how quickly he rose through the system.
Right. Now the question will be, okay, he's embraced it, he's been doing it before anybody else was, this is his form of... No, this is his notoriety. This is his calling card immediately. We found out 15 minutes ago, and now already he is Mr. Advanced Stats Guy.
And maybe he's not, right? Like, maybe it's just one of the things he does.
I think it's pretty... I don't know that everybody online is wrong right now.
No. He certainly subscribes, but is he a guy that says, don't show me the tape, I just want the numbers? Probably not. He probably wants the tape and the numbers, right? And the original.
Now, there's no need to backpedal already.
I'm not backpedaling.
If he's this is what he subscribes to, it will be an interesting study because, you know, a lot of people who believe in it will want them to succeed, will want good things for him, and those who are against it are just as equally going to sit there and wait. I can't wait till they fail so I can rip these guys.
Speaking of which, has Steve Simmons welcomed him to the Corsi Hockey League yet?
He has.
Very good.
This debate is not going away.
The one problem I have with the debate is it's been framed around here, and it's not you, it's in mainstream media in Canada, is that it's suggested like it's a take it or leave it all in. It's not. It's just one more tool.
But
it really is.
But it goes both ways. The people who don't believe it say it's stupid, and then the people who do believe it and put stock in, well, then they get their back up because people are saying it's stupid, so then it's 50-50.
I'll just make up one point to see if it explains what I'm trying to say here. We can't argue whether Sean Monahan had 22 goals or not. It's a stat. It's there. It's just, and that's not the only way you measure Sean Monahan. It's a number that represents something he did. The same can be said about zone starts. Those numbers aren't wrong. There is a certain percentage of his draws that he takes in the offensive zone versus defensive. It's not up for debate. Now, whether you choose to use that info or not is up for debate. Ditto for possession, ditto for, you know, the strength of competition or line mates that he's with. So, to me, I don't see it as this huge meteoric shift. It's just a guy that incorporates that instead of plus minus, or this instead of whatever else may have been used in the past, or it's just more data coming in from which to make decisions.
But this will be that signpost, right?
Certainly.
This is the first hire of a guy in a prominent GM or AGM position that seemingly...
It's been his calling card. It's been his calling card.
This is what I do. This is who I am.
Because if a 40-year-old gets hired in this job that believes in it, but it's not public... It's not news. Because he's so young, people have to say, why is he able to be in this position at this age? So it might be the exact same philosophy that many AGMs have in the NHL. But because he's 28, you're right. He'll be the poster boy.
And clearly, and I Brendan Shanahan, I don't know if it's a leap of faith. I don't know if it's a huge risk. He believes it. He believes in this guy. He's obviously done his due diligence and has heard enough from people that this guy knows what he's doing and can take this on. To me, it is fascinating how it will mesh in that general manager office between he and Nonis, what it means for Nonis, and now everyone will sit with, you know, grab your popcorn and your drinks and start watching Maple Leaf hockey to see if there is a difference in the way they play, scout, draft, trade. All of it.
Well, and it's a GM too, right? Like, we probably need 3-4 years to see. Because, I mean, he might not have extended Randy Carlyle looking at some of the possession metrics that he's had, right?
Well, and that's the other thing.
And now that's what he inherits. He inherits a team that was set up by guys that said, we had a budget and we didn't even use it because we didn't know how, we didn't see value.
Did you get the press release? Because I've not received it. But
I have it here. The new assistant general manager press release. That's what you're talking about?
Okay. Because I thought I had read something about where Dubas had basically said something to the effect of, you know, the changes could be mild, but I would expect you'll see us dumping the puck in far less.
I haven't seen anything like that, sorry. But may or may not exist. I don't know. Can't help you.
So it's that kind of day.
But it started off with nothing to talk about, and we've actually done all right in terms of some news today. The Jays call up a guy. We've got... an AGM that's very interesting in terms of not a traditional profile with the wealthiest NHL franchise. And Antoine Roussel's got a deal.
Okay, I guess we can take a break. We'll take a break and come back. Question for, we'll talk about the Flames and where they're at with it. Do we naturally assume that one of these guys, Loisel or Poulin, because they were going to, one of them was probably going to be the next general manager. Never happened. Do we expect it now, all of a sudden, one of them's going to pop up?
What's their track record?
903 Sports at 960 The Fan.